That's one small step for man.
And we're back to the second episode of TKW Draft Season, a miniseries produced by the Knicks Wall Podcast, which is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Make sure you watch or listen to the last episode of the Knicks Wall Podcast. We recapped pretty much the Knicks season because I doubt Knicks basketball will return. And make sure you tune in next Wednesday. Next Wednesday is Anthony Corbo's last day as Knicks Wall Podcast host, unfortunately. Ant, we're going to miss you. We love you. And I'm not looking forward to Wednesday, but I am at the same time. So just make sure you check that out. Make sure you're subscribed to TKW Podcast, The Knicks Wall, at The Knicks Wall. And, of course, my co-hosts, make sure you follow them, starting with Joseph Nardone, college basketball writer extraordinaire, featured on Forbes, College Basketball Today, and many others. You could follow him at Joseph Nardone on Twitter. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in my pajamas, which is a plus.
Hey, that quarantine life is killing, man. And joining me, as always, my co-host, my flex queen, Jess Reinhart. How are you?
Good, man. I don't know what regular clothes are versus pajamas anymore, but, you know, we're just chilling in sweatpants 24/7.
Yeah, going to work in Nike sweats was my life goal. Like, you know, when you say dress for the job you want, I'm finally living the dream. But yeah, make sure you follow Jess at jryan44. I got that right?
Nailed it.
Perfect. Yeah, so make sure you follow her. So, guys, college season is officially over. The NBA season remains in limbo, but college has declared it is over. We have an All-America first team. We will have no tournament basketball. As someone who is supposed to be in Vegas right now, I am crying on the inside, but luckily I have you guys here to pick up my spirits. So let's just throw it around. Joe, what are your takeaways from this college season? Best player, best team, whatever you got.
Well, listen, obviously the season was cut short and it was in a weird way. Excuse me. And I was viewing this season as a bad, like as terms as pro prospects, pretty bad all year round, and was not emotionally invested in like any team or player more so than I have been in years past. So it's weird when you ask that question, given the context of everything happening around us. What I'm going to remember most about this is the Big East tipping off while every other league is shuttering their conference tournaments because of the coronavirus and COVID-19. As far as player of the year and stuff like that goes, I know people made cases for like Obi and a couple other guys and stuff like that. This was like the one season where I didn't feel like somebody jumped out at me to the place where I'm like, yeah, that guy's the for sure best player in the country. So like, I know this isn't the great answer for like a podcast, but like, I defer. Like, I don't think there was like an actual national player of the year.
Well, that's the problem with this draft class overall, because there's just no one to say like, wow, this guy is clearly a cut above. I feel like that guy is probably an international guy. But in terms of the college season, I think if we did have to pick someone, I would probably go with Obi. He's the only one. Dayton was probably the best team to me all year, and I'm pissed off we couldn't see how that translated to the tournament, because I always feel like the tournament's the great litmus test for a lot of prospects. But Jess, would anybody that sticks out to you?
I mean, I wouldn't be me if I didn't defend Luka Garza a little bit. I mean, he dominated, and it's funny. So you say you're crying on the inside, Mike. I have cried on the outside about lack of NCAA tournament basketball this season. And like, no lie, yesterday I watched, because it was the whatever year anniversary of Gonzaga versus Davidson when Steph went off. I watched the full game on YouTube yesterday, and this morning I was reminded it was it's been one year since Iowa beat Cincinnati in the first round of the tournament. And so I watched like a condensed version of that on YouTube, and like to see the jump that Luka made from last year to this year, and even last year, like, he was pretty dominant in that game too when they needed him to be, went and got buckets when they needed him to, stepped out a couple of times to hit a couple threes, but like just his body and like his ability to finish, you can just see how big of a jump he made from last year to this year. And I just think at times he was pretty much unstoppable, and in the Big Ten, like, that's not a short order to fill, you know? It's it was pretty impressive most of the year. So I think while I love Obi, everyone knows I love Obi, I think I'd have to give it to Luka on this one.
The popular second pick in that order is, like we said, Joe said it better, where no one really popped out of the screen, and like you said, Luka was dominant. And in terms of a pro, like his pro appeal, you look at that second first round pick, if Sadiq Bey isn't there for the Knicks, I'm taking a hard look at Luka. There's still a need for backup center.
Yeah, it's, and I think, and this is where also the season ending so abruptly, it's like, we don't really know yet who's fully going to be in the draft. Like, Elijah Hughes from Syracuse just came out yesterday and said he's going to. I mean, Luka still has one more year left, so he hasn't even said, like, he is, you know, putting his name in the draft. And it's like, if someone's saying they're putting their name in the draft now, does that mean they're staying in? Because it looks more and more likely that there's not going to be, like, a combine or something where guys were putting their name in, then doing the combine, then deciding, am I staying or am I going back to
Nick
school?
Nick Arante, who was on last week and will be joining us for future episodes, he actually posted a tweet in our Slack that Woj dropped. He said players can make decisions on entering the draft, but they can also get, I believe they can get assessed to see where they would go, and then they can make a decision on that.
Right. But it's just so different than it has been, right, the last 2 years. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, when and, like, how soon guys are going to start announcing that they are putting their name in.
Yeah, the no combine thing's a pretty big deal, because like a guy like Garza would normally declare just to go to the combine and get the feedback,
yeah,
and find out like if he would have a chance of going in the first round. But the fact that he can't go to the combine and be there in front of scouts, like, I think people don't realize just how little NBA coaches watch of college basketball during the season. So, like, for a lot of coaches, it's their first time seeing them. And seeing somebody live, if you talk to anybody that, like, actually scouts these kids, seeing somebody live is way different than seeing them on TV, because there's, like, you could be listed as 6'10", 6'11", and you could also actually be 6'10", 6'11", but do you play that size? What does your frame look like against other people? Stuff that, like, all the measurables you would think would depict how they are, but they don't really accurately depict how they play or whatever. I know that sounds like a weird thing to say, but some guys are 6'10", but they don't look 6'10". They don't play 6'10". They don't feel 6'10" against other 6'10" guys. Because they're already talking about, like Rothstein was saying, like they might have to do the draft through Skype. There's going to be a lot of guys that declare, I'm sure, as always, because they always have that option to opt back out. But it's just their feedback's going to be way worse than they ever got before, which is going to lead to some, unfortunately, probably some bad decisions, and then some guys staying just out of fear.
Yeah, because I just think, I mean, for me, I just always go back to, like, Kevin Huerter. He had every intention of going back to school, but he just had a killer combine, and it was like he would be dumb to go back because he had a guarantee from a team at a certain point in the first round, and so he knew at the very least he was going then. So it's like, you have to stay in at that point. But I just don't see how much someone, like, how different of opinion someone could get on their own game, like, from now until the draft, when they're not going to be able to see play. Like, it's just the most bizarre
scenario.
Add that
with the tournament? Yeah, go ahead.
Now, can I ask a question here? Do you guys... Oh, no, I'm going to say, do you guys like Luka so much because you didn't get to Luka?
That's always going to sting. That's always going to be good, Luka. Garza, I mean, Garza's more of just a, if he's there, I'll take him type of player.
I don't on it,
but yeah.
I mean, I think I said this last pod. Like, he's just the quintessential college player. I still don't really know how he's gonna translate into the NBA. It's gonna be interesting. I mean, I just fought for him to be player of the year, but do I think he's going to be a great NBA player? I really don't know.
Not great, but I could definitely see him being a rotational guy, which is what I would expect if he were to come to New York or really any team. I don't think you're going to be getting Marc Gasol. I think you'd just be getting like Willy Hernan Gomez slightly better, mm-hmm. which not bad.
Not terrible.
Yeah. Quick breaking news just while we're here. Not that anyone really gives a shit. Harvard grad transfer Seth Towns chooses Ohio State over Duke. Suck it, Coach.
That was
K.
Like, wasn't that like last night? Come on, Mike. Get with
PM,
it.
What? 11 p.m. Eastern on SportsCenter.
Yeah, it was last what? Night. Come on, Mike.
No, I'm blaming Ev. Fuck that. I'm not taking the free. He just posted that. I thought it was breaking
news. I'm sorry. I didn't know I had to be your, you know, deliverer of breaking news. My fault.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, I'm deferring that to Ev. Ev's getting blamed for that.
Oh man, that's got him bad. Good. He just got fake Woj. He got fake Woj right there.
Nah. That's how bad.
At least
news
it happened. If it did happen,
that a Harvard graduate's transfer is being televised.
I literally sent yesterday morning when the tweet went out that he'd be announcing last night. I said, yeah. Normally I wouldn't care, but I'm clinging to any and everything I can. So let's go Ohio State.
Hey, anything anti-Duke, I'm very in on. That one that 1 year last year was just
and
just
they're losing.
So
did you see Alex O'Connell's transferring?
To where?
He's just in the portal, hasn't decided, but...
Go to Kentucky.
Ugh,
let's talk about Trey Jones declaring and how awful of an NBA prospect he is. Taco Fall last year stood 37 feet away from him. That's how much they didn't think he could score or shoot. And now he's an NBA draft prospect. One, this class is so bad, he'll probably go in the first round. Two, Trey Jones isn't even close to an NBA player. He's like Rajon Rondo without the height, the defense, the athleticism, or any of the skill, and he's going to go in the first round.
I don't know how he averaged 16 a game this year. That's
because somebody had a score.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how? Like last year when I was watching him, like I said, I sound like a broken record. The only shot he seemed to have any confidence in was a pull-up right below the free throw line. Just not the shot a pro player.
Well, maybe he took 8 of those.
Listen, he took nine and a half shots from 2 a game. I did not to be fair to him, by the way, his 3-point shooting did improve to like 36% this year. So I guess there's the idea that he's a more competent shooter, but he shot under 4 of those a game. But I bet you if we looked into it, most of his field goals attempts were inside the free throw line.
Yeah. And
I haven't done the research on this. I just wanted to bash him.
His appeal, and that's fine. Completely fair, clean shot. His appeal is defense, that to me. Like, if the Knicks were ever considering him, which I wouldn't because shooting's already a major need.
His defense is so overrated. Last year,
it is.
He did well on Shamari Pons, and everybody's like, oh, what a good defender because he stopped Shamari Pons. And
well, the Duke rub is always going to exist. That's just
but it's like Shamari Pons is barely an NBA player. He was in and out of the league. It's like, great, he could stop, like, you know, 10 guys in the ACC that'll never see a second of any professional level ever.
My take on that is Tyus, his brother Tyus, I thought was way better than him at Duke, and he's a decent NBA player. He's not anything special. So it's kind of like the Marcus Teague, Jeff Teague thing going on, where if the older brother's better than you and not doing well, I'm not going to get the younger brother who's not doing well.
I agree with you. That's how I really don't want to like go out of my way to like just bash Trey Jones, but like if his redeeming quality is smart basketball player and plays defense, look to see how Mateen Cleese or Peyton Silva did when they try to be NBA players. It's the same
Peyton
mold.
Siva, man. fuck that guy.
People thought he was going to be a good NBA player, and it's like, why? Like, why? He can't shoot, and he won a lot of games.
Small. Yeah. Because he won for that cheater, Rick Pitino.
Rick Pitino.
Is now at Iona, yeah.
I wrote about that
Iona. How weird is that?
Crosspoints.com. Everybody go read it. Search my name and Rick Pitino. Yes.
Check that out. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for Sienna to beat them.
Are you anti-Pitino, Joe? Because I am.
Yes, I am very much anti-Pitino. I'm also anti the people that are giving him his 25th chance. Like, it's not only, like, Pitino being back in college basketball, and I know this is an NBA draft prospect podcast, but we're going to go on a small rant here. The people like Dick Vitale and these other people are like, oh, it's so great. Rick Pitino is back in the game just at the right time. The fact that this dude's been given 85 million second chances and he's still being portrayed by some, by not all, by some as like some kind of like leader of men and good guy and all this other stuff. It is just an indictment on the entire sport of college basketball. Like it really is. Like Rick Pitino should not be in college basketball whatsoever. Not only did you have like, it's a lifetime achievement in scandal, right? Like if you were to if you were just to take one scandal at a thing, you'd be like, oh, okay, he cheated on his wife. That's none of her business. Fine. If you were to do the hooker scandal or the stripper scandal to one thing, you'd be like, all right, maybe he could recover. If you could do like the 900 different NCAA scandals, you'd be like, oh, okay. But like it's all of them on one dude who's shown no remorse and keeps saying it was a few bad eggs that he had nothing to do with. And he's Iona's new coach. I hope Iona loses every game.
Yes, Joe. Yes.
Fun story. Back in college, I will not say the year, but Montrezl Harrell was on their team. Empty arena. I just stood there just to heckle Rick Pitino for 2 hours. I lost my voice screaming, fuck you, Rick Pitino, for upwards of 2 hours.
I really can't wait for, like, the first Manhattan Iona game to see what those fans do to him. Or I'm also just interested to see what, like, this like is the Times Union Center, which that's where Sienna plays. Like, are 7,000 seats gonna be full for when Rick Pitino comes, strictly because it's Rick Pitino? Like, I'm very interested to see like all the ripple effects this has in for the MAC in general. But that being said, Sienna's, oh, I can't wait. Oh my God. I need college basketball back so bad.
Yeah. I just, just to put a cap on Pitino, he was supposed to coach Puerto Rico and he backed out. So he is a coward and I want nothing to do with him. But,
if he really missed basketball that much, American basketball, like he said, he would have done what Jim Calhoun did. Do you know what I mean? Go to a Division III school and build it up.
Yeah.
But he's so greedy and so ego-filled and so, like, everything that's wrong with the way people godify to college coaches that, you know, he had to get back at the D1 level. I know it's Iona, so people are like, well, he went back to a lower school and all this stuff. If he's back because he wants to be back and he knows in his brain that if he does well there for 3 or 4 years, he could get another power conference job and somebody disgusting enough will give it to him.
Yeah, probably.
College basketball stinks. The whole ideology stinks. They all should be ashamed of themselves. Harvard, you too, pals. You have an endowment of $40 billion and you're laying off people. Jerks.
I love
people
it.
Have to stop I pretending. When... People have to stop pretending colleges are like these places of just higher learning and altruistic value and a place where people learn. They're fucking businesses. And all these ones, they're all cutthroat and they're all evil. And they're not all. I'm sorry. But many of them are evil and disgusting.
I would side with the all, but like I said, there's a couple good guys.
I love when Joe really, really gets passionate about something.
It's good to know, because I have a feeling, we'll get into the prospects in a second. I have a feeling.
A $40 billion endowment at Harvard, the biggest in country, and they laid off people, including cafeteria workers, and they're not going to pay for them. They're just going to let the unemployment.
Well, that kind of goes back to, I mean, as great as the NBA players have been, and kudos to them for donating money, where the fuck are the owners? Only Mark Cuban's donated. All these guys are like, oh, I can't pay these workers. Are you fucking joking? Like, are you really fucking joking? Like, these people matter.
And it shouldn't be on the players.
Yeah, it shouldn't. the millionaires are paying.
It shouldn't be on the employees to play other employees. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be like, say we were, the three of us were paid, right, to do this podcast by the Knicks wall. And then one of the three of us got laid off. It wouldn't be on the other two to pay us and not the Knicks wall. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It shouldn't be on the employees to pay other employees. It should be on the employer to take care of them, take care of your employees. Like, it boggles my mind. Like, this is something that's rooted years old now, where it's Domino's is paving roads for us, right? Domino's paved roads. Or we do this thing where it's GoFundMe to help me with my insurance, where we're the system's so broken that we're reliant upon strangers and the goodwill of humans that just want to help over the actual system. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's nice that people do this, right? Like, it's nice that Shay Serrano goes on his Twitter and he's like, I'll help people that are in need. He shouldn't have to fucking do it.
Yeah, I agree. And shout out to Shay Serrano, man. He's always helping out people in need, and we need more people like that. And yeah, it's I think this time is really just weeding out people that we already knew were scummy, but you're starting to really see who's about it and who's not. And it's sad that it's come to this. That
I'm sorry for ruining a basketball.
No, it's okay. Well, perfect segue to jump back into it. So we're just going to run through the college guys. The only All-American that's in the lottery is Obi Toppin. Luca Garza was also on there, as well as Marcus Howard from Marquette. If you people remember, that is the person, for people that don't watch college, rather, that is Ja Morant's first matchup in last year's tournament. It was a pretty good game. Rounding out Miles Powell from that loser school in Jersey that's not Rutgers. And Peyton Pritchard from Oregon, who I don't know is going to be a NBA player. I don't think so. But he's a pretty fun college player. He had that great game winner against Washington, unfortunately. I love my Huskies. But I feel like he was pretty exciting at Oregon. But, yeah, anyway, Obi's probably the only pro prospect that made the first team, which is bananas. So, I mean, before we get into the full prospect dive, was there anyone you felt that's in the draft that should have been nominated or in heavy consideration for first team?
No, I think for most of the year, that first team has been the general consensus. I think maybe I don't remember the preseason All-American team, but I'm guessing maybe like Cassius Winston was up there or something like that. But I think for definitely like the later half of the year, that's pretty much been like the consensus first team. It'll be interesting. Like, I mean, Marcus Howard is a bucket.
Yeah, I love him. I love watching him play. He reminds me of Perry. Remember Perry Jackson from Baylor? I think it was Perry Jackson. I forgot what it was. Perry White. I don't know. He was a short guy, number 55 on Baylor. Very, very similar spark plug. I don't know if he's going to be a pro, because I know Perry wasn't, but I'm going to look up his real name while you keep on going. But
no, I definitely think he could find a landing spot and, you know, go in there, maybe just be like a spark plug on like a second team or something like that. But I guess same with Miles Powell. Like, I didn't watch a ton of Seton Hall. I was really looking forward to that matchup that I teased on our last pod that never happened. But yeah, in terms of the first team, I think that was pretty, pretty solid and pretty standard.
And the Baylor guy was Pierre Jackson. I was combining him and Perry Jones. So
yeah. Okay. I knew something was wrong, but I just,
and I knew his last name was Jackson. All right.
We'll take it.
Joe, anybody that stuck up?
Marcus Howard is just rich man's Kiefer Sykes.
Rich man Kiefer Sykes, oh boy.
So he's not going to be a pro prospect, is what you're saying.
Kiefer Sykes, man, he's a big deal in China.
Hey, good for him, hey. Man. So
I go think get that money. That China league drops
right now,
bags.
Miles Powell is projected to be Mr. Irrelevant, 60th overall. I don't see Marcus Howard on these pre-drafts, I think.
Because he's 5'9". They list him as 5'11", which means he's definitely 2 inches shorter.
That sucks.
Vecini, I mean, he had him go into the Hawks with the 52nd pick.
That's what the Hawks need, another guard that can't defend.
Hey, you know who's on the mock draft now? Nick Richards, baby. Nick Richards. I feel like that's the.
Oh my god! You shoehorned.
Have you watched that documentary yet, Mike?
I'm going to though. I keep on forgetting. But yeah, that's kind of been my shock of the season. Kentucky's best player, and that's another thing I hate about the tournament. Every year, one freshman in Kentucky goes off. Stop laughing. every year, a Kentucky freshman separates himself in the tournament, and now I don't know. So I'm leaving this season believing that Nick Richards is the best Kentucky player.
That's rough.
That's rough.
Rough look for your boys.
We should be national champions since we finished the year with a win, but
how could you go? We Rutgers basketball is finally good. Like New Jersey basketball in general.
I take both teams.
You can't claim.
Oh yes,
multiple.
I can. I can. This Rutgers has been so out of
it.
Oh
my god.
They don't have a pro prospect.
You know what's really neat about Nick Richards though and his pro prospect? He played, you know, 2.5, you could count 3-ish years of college basketball. He and I have the same amount of major.
Yeah, he was pretty bad. He was unplayable his first year. Got kind of better his second year, and then this year he just took a leap. I was like, wow, this is impressive. It was kind of like who's last year's pick? PJ Washington. Freshman year, he was the reason they got eliminated from the tournament because he couldn't hit a free throw. Comes back. Maybe Cal's a great developer and we just never noticed.
Let me tell you something about Nick Richards. You're not going to like to hear it. He's going to suffer. You're suffering from it now. The Thomas Robinson effect.
Interesting. All right, I want to hear more.
So Thomas Robinson, for those that don't remember, at Kansas, it took him forever to become good, right? And then he won National Player of the Year his senior year. He also has like a legitimately horrible origin story where you had to root for the kid, right? Like it was a very tough background he came from, and you just wanted him to succeed, and I'm glad he secured that bag when he got drafted. Nick Richards, similar thing. It took him forever to really get going, and what happens is when you're like a junior, when you're like 20, 21, you're a lot different than an 18, 19-year-old physically, so it's really misleading. Also, I don't know how much the NBA is clamoring for guys that can't shoot. This for Thomas Robinson, this happened to him in real time, right? Like, I didn't like him as a prospect. Now, this is forever ago when Thomas Robinson got drafted, but, like, you could still go, well, he's an energy guy. He could rebound. He could play well. Not things that you want from your third overall pick, but, like, the NBA changed while he was there. Now the NBA's changed where there's no value for big guys that can't help spread the floor. So I don't like what's Nick Richards defining quality that makes him an intriguing draft prospect. To me, it's he rebounds fairly well. But like he rebounds fairly well at the college level where he's bigger than everybody else.
I don't believe he's going to be. No, I really don't. I don't see him as a pro player personally. I will happily be presently surprised. But the only UK guy I see making a pro impact out of this team is probably Maxey. Maybe Quickley. I don't think Quickley's going to come out this year, but he's a good shot. He has a chance at maybe having a couple like bench spots. He reminds me of Deron Lamb in that regard, where he might find the G League more consistently than a pro team. But yeah, I think Kentucky's just – it was really surprising. Yeah,
they stink this year.
I just want you to watch Student Athlete on HBO and then try to convince me that Nick Richards likes playing basketball.
That's a big thing with athletes. I think I told you when we originally talked about this, my friend played with David Price, baseball player. He hated it.
Oh, yeah,
he was
still
like the fact that he was good when he hated doing something, that's a credit to you. And I feel like that's a good segue to Anthony Edwards. Does he hate playing basketball?
Wow.
Poor Anthony Edwards.
That was incredible. That was a segue. That was incredible.
Quarantine made me good.
We didn't even plan it. Mike is thriving in quarantine.
So, well, Anthony Edwards still projected after Wiseman's projected number one just because most people expect the Warriors to win the lottery, which will not happen. But for now, Anthony Edwards is the first college guy off the board still, remarkably. 19 points per game, 40% from the field, which is pretty gross, 29.4% from three. We've said it last episode, nothing about him screams, I am the best player in this draft. Jess, what was his last game against Ole Miss? Yeah, just go in real quick.
Let me hit you with this. So that coveted matchup we brought up last pod in the SEC tournament, Georgia versus Ole Miss. Mr. Anthony Edwards, 40 minutes, went 2 for 13 from the field, including 1 of 9 from three, and had 4 assists, 2 rebounds, only 1 turnover. Ended with 6 points. 6 points, and he played the entire game.
Fucking hero. No wonder why he died in Top Gun.
Four assists. Like, give me something else. Please. I mean, miraculously, they still won 81-63, but again, it was against Ole Miss. but 2 for 13? That's who you want to draft second on coming off their last game.
Like, I mean, there's not much else to say. Man, it's just,
I don't know.
It's just, that stinks.
What was that? Do you have a soundboard?
That's incredible.
It's just,
I was talking to guys I consider smarter than me when it comes to draft prospects. And Chris, I'll just say his name. I don't think he'll be offended. Chris Stone from the Sporting News. He and I were talking about it. And then he did a podcast with Sam Fassini, the Game Theory podcast. And Sam is a lot more optimistic about Anthony Edwards' prospects. And me and Chris were talking about how, because this draft class is bad, right? And I think everybody could admit that. You have to kind of cling to a certain kind of narrative. And this is something, Mike, oddly, me and you did this last year for RJ Barrett, right? Where we're like, well, college spacing's killing him, and when he gets to the NBA, it'll help him be better, and all this stuff. That's the narrative people are now using for Anthony Edwards. Oh, he has no help. The spacing's killing him. When he's trying to get to the rim, it hurts. Somebody has to shoot for Georgia, so he's going to shoot 1,000 times, and all that stuff. But I always will revert back to, but RJ Barrett was way better. Like, his numbers were better. He was more efficient. Like, the numbers Jess said against a bad Ole Miss team is atrocious. And then his season numbers, as Mike mentioned, under 30% from three, 40% from the floor. He's not great defensively. I mean, like, he's up there, like, a top three pick by default. And I feel like people are bending over backwards to make excuses for him. And what I said this on the last podcast, what annoys me about it, though, is it's the same people that were down on RJ Barrett that are propping him up, when all the defenses you could use for RJ Barrett are now being used for Anthony Edwards, except Anthony Edwards is actually even worse using that same logic. Like, if they're both, if RJ Barrett also struggled because of spacing at Duke, as is Anthony Edwards, why is Anthony Edwards' efficiency numbers so much worse?
And like, that's the scary part, worse. Because mechanically he looks like a pro prospect, a star. Like, if I was just seeing the Michigan State game, like, if that's the only thing I saw of him, I was like, holy shit, this guy's a star. You just don't see it enough. And with RJ, at least RJ went balls to the wall. His numbers were way better, as you said. Edwards is just, yeah.
He shot 53% from the floor and 31% from the arc. That's such a, and he rebounded at a higher rate. He defended slightly better.
And RJ never vanished.
He's a great defender. And they never vanished. And RJ's thing was, everybody used to get mad at him for forcing everything. Okay, so does Anthony Edwards. And I understand it's a different situation because Anthony Edwards doesn't play with a lot of great teammates like RJ Barrett did. But, like, it's, well, that's, man, 7.73 is a game and you're shooting.
And the misconception with RJ, not to rehash, he played with Zion, yes, absolute stud. Cam Reddish disappeared a lot. Yeah.
Turned out Cam Reddish was trash.
And then after that, turned out Cam Reddish was trash. By the next best person on that team from a scoring perspective.
They had the guy from the White Stripes
Jack
playing
White
a bunch
shot
of minutes.
Ice cold 27% from three last year. 27. As your 3-point special. Me too. Everyone
I thought
did.
He was going to be good.
And so that's why RJ's, that was RJ's bailout. And look, I'll give Ant Edwards his due. Every interview I've seen of him, he seems like a knowledgeable guy, like a good kid. And Georgia isn't the best place. He chose it, though. He chose to go there, so he knew what he was doing. unless he, I would want him to see to stay in Atlanta, go with someone with like Trae Young who could set him up for easy buckets, because I do not want to see him on a team with the Knicks where he's going to have to create for himself. Because I have a feeling we're going to see what we see at Georgia, where he's just aimlessly doing step backs like J.R. Smith's. Like every bad J.R. Smith game, I think, would be the norm for Edwards, especially in year one, which I want zero parts of. Yeah,
he
I can see that
Deion
too.
He screams Deion Waiters to me. He screams Deion Waiters, irrationally confident, can't score, like will put up scoring numbers when given the opportunity, but none of it's going to help to win. None of it's going to be efficient. I know nothing of his character or anything like that, so I don't want to speak to any of that. I'm not comparing him to Deion Waiters in that way. But like, I've still yet to hear like an actually solid, reasonable, consistent explanation why people view him as a good prospect. Because you could say, like, somebody could put up those videos and be like, look at all these things he does great. But then none of those numbers back that up. And then if you use the other logic, which is saying, well, his numbers are bad because of, they're not consistently applying that to every other draft prospect. They're just bending over backwards for this guy because you have to cling to something. And I guess it's better than talking about James Wiseman, who's probably like an archaic big man.
The scary part, just clinging on to hope, is how you end up with a bad prospect. He fits, if you look on his tankathon thing, he's a blank canvas prospect where you are just clinging to development, which is not linear. You can't say, all right, next year he's gonna take a leap forward in 3-point percentage. He may not, and then what? You passed on somebody that was already further ahead or can supply a better need, like LaMelo Ball, like Killian Hayes, just because, oh, Anthony Edwards, he's got the size and he has the mechanics, so naturally he's going to be good if we develop him right. No, that's not always the case. Anything else on Edwards before we move on to our next guy?
I got nothing.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Good luck, Goose. We'll be rooting for you. But all right, next guy, Cole Anthony. I want to get to Cole Anthony now because we talked about him last week. Not the greatest year for him. He finished with 18.5 points. Also a bad shooter, 38% from the field, 34.8% from three. He's a good shooter. To me, he's Dennis Smith with a jump shot. I don't know if that's fair to him, but Jess, what was his last game?
So
what was
last
his last
game
impression?
Was first round of the ACC tournament versus Syracuse. UNC lost 81-53. So he had played 37 minutes, went 2-for-10 from the field, on 1-for-6 from three, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 6 turnovers, ended with 5 points. Not a great look.
Yeah, and I feel like he's the prospect being force-fed because I was reading, I'm not going to say the name of the writer or outlet that put this out, but they're saying Anthony's probably one of the most likely prospects because the Knicks have had their eye on him the longest, which someone please explain that to me, why that should be a reason you take someone. But he does seem, especially if they fall, he seems like a guy that would likely end up there. I'm not a fan of taking him over. Like I said, I've been very vocal about liking LaMelo and Killian over him. Even Haliburton, who we'll get to in a second. But, I mean, Joe, anything to cling on to for Anthony's development? Right now, he just looks like a guy who can only play one position. And if his shot's not falling...
Yeah, I don't want to get too redundant. Because I know I talked about him last time I was on with you guys about how I feel like most of this is based off his, like, 10 years of hype building through the New York Post and Slam. And we talked about, you know, obviously the Knicks connection, all that stuff. It's the worst North Carolina team and forever long. He was a big reason why, not just his fault again, but almost everything I said about Anthony Edwards applies to him, except he played with better players than Anthony Edwards. And he's less like the Dennis Smith comp. He's less athletic as well. So yeah, like if you're picking a 10 and he's there for some reason, you might as well take like a flyer on him, because I think this draft again is awful and I'm being very pessimistic about it. And obviously, there'll be a couple guys that end up being good that nobody thinks will be good. And maybe Cole Anthony will be one of those guys. But at a certain point, I just feel like you just got to look at the guys for what they are. And if we're being honest about it, if Cole Anthony came into North Carolina with no hype and he was just some guy and his name was like Bob Williamson, nobody'd care. He wouldn't even be a lottery pick.
And like you said, 10th, like anything below six, excuse me, anything below six.
So yeah, sorry.
I'll take him, obviously, because I
had my mute button on, so I wasn't coughing on you. Yeah, like anything below. Honestly, anything after like the top three picks, you could jumble up that rest of that thing. If you talk yourself into loving Cole Anthony and you're at five, I get it, right? Because what's your other option? Do you know what I mean? He's like, really?
Hampton, RJ Hampton's probably the only guy, or Maxie.
But like Maxie can't shoot. Maxie can't shoot, right? He burst onto the scene this year. We're all like, yeah, Maxie, he's great. And then he shot under 30% from three. And
well, yeah, no, let's get to him next.
Oh,
let's
no, right and I'm Maxie. Just saying, like, all these guys are super flawed in areas that are very important to basketball, like shooting. And you said it really well earlier, and it's not something that's discussed enough when we talk about draft prospects. Development isn't linear. Just because a guy's a teenager doesn't mean you could expect growth year after year after year. And the trope I'm in, NBA draft guys are so much better about this now. They don't even do it anymore, right? Like, this is something Chad Ford used to do. Like, the guys that do it now don't do this at all. But they used to say, like, all he needs to do is develop a jump shot. Like, as if that's something nobody was already trying to develop. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are trying to be good jump shooters. They just can't get there for whatever the reason, whether it be mechanics, just an inability, whatever. If it was just as easy as trying to get better at it, I'd be shooting 52% for three for the Sixers right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not this thing where you could go, oh, Maxie or Cole Anthony or Edwards or whoever, all they have to do is develop this one specific skill set. All these things, like all their negatives and their flaws, like for the most part, they're going to stay their negative and flaws. They might be able to get like the bad to like almost competent, but it's never going to be like, I'm a net negative shooter. And then 5 years from now, I'm going to be a net positive shooter. That rarely happens.
Right. And with Maxie, like, I'm already doing it because my UK bias is going all the time. So Maxie kind of had a similar year to Anthony in terms of shooting, except he was even worse from three, which made no sense to me, because if you watch him play, he has a good release, a lot of energy, really good on defense. But I'm looking at his numbers right now. I'm like, holy shit, it was really this bad? 14 points a game, 29.2% from three, 42% from the field. He did shoot 83% from the line. And I guess that, like, if someone is clinging to development, especially with shooting, that's the key stat you're always going to go to. We've kind of been conditioned to do that now, where if a guy is not shooting well, it's like, well, spacing, and he shoots well from free throw. That's not always going to happen. So someone like Maxie, who I was high on for most of the year just because UK guy, and that's somebody I wanted to see how they performed in the tournament to kind of justify whether he was worth a pick or not. I see him now as a mid-round pick, and if he was on the team, I would look him as a bench guy at best. Jess, what was the last impression for Maxie?
It was that last game of the season, UK versus Florida. He played 39 minutes, was 1 of 11 from the floor, and 1 of 3 from 3, 4 for 4 from the line, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, a turnover, 7 points.
You guys are leaving a great lasting impression.
I mean,
yeah, seriously.
Yeah, all right. It's just, yeah, it's very, I guess you do have to kind of cling on to development, which, like I said, is very dangerous. But somebody who left us a little earlier than the suspension was Iowa State's Tyrese Haliburton. There was a moment in time where he was the first point guard off the board. That's not the case anymore. Right now, he's projected to go sixth overall to the Knicks if they stay there. Tall guard, can shoot, can pass. What was his last game?
Yeah,
Jess? Do you have his?
Or I can pull it off. So, well, it was the game he got hurt. It was versus Kansas State. He played 25 minutes, went 3 of 6 from the field, and that was all 3-pointers. 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 turnovers with 9 points. And then the the few games right before that, they were all losses for Iowa State, but he had 12, 14, 17, and 12 points. Looks like a couple games it was like 5 for 8 from shooting, 4 for 11 from the floor. Another guy who's really good at the free throw line. Looks like he shot 82% on the year. 50%, is that right? 50% from the field on the year?
That's right.
Yeah, it, from 3, 40, what, almost 42% from 3. I mean, I went back and read, was it Vicini's piece? It was like right after he got hurt. Yeah, Vicini wrote a piece for The Athletic about, you know, is he worth a top 10 pick, especially after this injury? And he really went into just those, how efficient those shooting numbers are, and how front offices that are heavy into the analytics are obviously going to fall in love with those type of numbers.
The appeal with Haliburton, specific to the Knicks, is he fills that desperate need that needed outside shooting and lead guard. So mm-hmm. that's very appealing. And it also allows Frank and RJ to still handle lead guard duties. So Halliburton's really good at spotting up. The way his release is set up, he doesn't look like he's going to be a good guy that can just, you know, pull up off the dribble like a Cole Anthony or Killian Hayes or even LaMelo. He doesn't look like he's going to have that step back in his game as much. He's going to be more of a spot up type of guy. So he's not the sexy pick, but there's no denying he does have appeal, especially like you just said, the analytics guys love him. And so far, Knicks have kind of been against analytics, to so to speak. They've gone with, you know, blank canvas prospect like Kevin Knox. Frank Ntilikina was another blank canvas guy. And then you have RJ Barrett, who analytics guys probably hate. So he would be definitely a change of pace pick. Joe, anything? Did you watch any Haliburton or have any feeling on him as a pro prospect?
I like him a lot relative to this class. Something to note about him, his first year at Iowa State, he did not shoot from the floor at all. All his attempts were from beyond the arc. I think he shot less than 2 times per game from the field. So like that's a little concerning. But he did improve upon that this year. He almost shot 6 times from the floor per game, and then he's still shooting a lot from outside, over 5.5 per game. All those things that you guys talked about, the efficiency numbers are important. He has decent size, where I think when you talk about Haliburton, right, is the value of what he brings isn't going to sound like, say, like the Knicks pick 6th and they take Haliburton at 6. Traditionally, you'd be like, why are we drafting a guy that projects to be just a floor spacer? Because that's all he really projects to be. It's where I feel like he's one of the few guys where you could say, I feel very positive that this one skill that is needed in the NBA is translatable, right? I feel myself very confident in knowing Haliburton will be a good three-point shooter in the NBA, if nothing else. Where every other prospect around him, I'm not 100% sure what any of them is going to do well in the NBA. So I feel like he's a safe pick. And I think a safe pick in this draft, especially when the reason for that safety pick is an elite level floor spacer, is somebody you should, like, you know, jump at if you can.
Nail around the head with that part. Safety, the floor, a high floor is very appealing in this draft. The one thing that does worry me is he doesn't get to the line at all. He averaged 2 free throw attempts per game this season. As a freshman, it was 0.7.
He doesn't attack the rim. He doesn't go to the rim. His first year, he attempted like one shot in the field. You know.
So is it kind of like Alonzo at UCLA? Obviously not as good. Alonzo was one of the best point guards we saw in recent memory for college. Is it kind of
Because Lonzo attacked the rim. Lonzo created a lot. Halliburton's like,
yeah,
he's a dude in the NBA where I imagine he's a spot, like, he could go off the dribble a little bit, but like he's like a spot up 3-point shooter at the NBA. Gotcha. It's just that I feel very confident that he's going to like shoot 38% to 40% in the NBA, where I have no idea what Maxie or Cole Anthony, or even, I don't want to jump ahead, but like guys like Nico Manu are going to be able to do well at the next level.
Yeah, And I think that's a good segue. Let's go to Nico. I know we're jumping around a little bit compared to where their order is.
He stinks.
But...
he's a ginger. Over.
Yeah, he's been bad too. And he went from a top 10 pick. I remember when I did like the preseason board, I had him in like my third tier of prospects to want. Now I can see him falling to the next second first round pick. I mean, the season is just 14 points. Again, a lot of guys are averaging 14 points this year. I'm looking at bad shooter, 39.2% from the field. He shot 32% from three, 5.3 assists, 1.2 steals, just about 80% from the line. Not memorable, though. Like, I remember throwing on late games on Saturdays, and he had one good game. I can't remember who the opponent was. He had a game winner. And then after that, I forgot he was playing some nights.
Did you guys know Chase Jeter was in Arizona this year? Sidebar.
I completely forgot Chase Jeter was playing college basketball this year. Yeah.
He wasn't the best player in Arizona this year. Nico Mannion wasn't the best basketball player on Arizona. I like Josh Green better as a prospect. Zeke, I can't pronounce his last name, was actually a better player at the college level. I don't have a ton of thoughts on him. Like, he's in like that guard range for, or yeah, in that, like, I guess the point guard range. He's, not somebody I'm like enthralled on. And I just talked all that shit about Cole Anthony. I view Nico Mannion like not even in that tier with Cole.
Well, like I said, I would put him even below, actually not below. He's probably in the same grouping as Maxey, but that's somebody I'm not, except like if my team is like, all right, this is going to be our starting guard next year, I might hit the panic button and start looking at Cade Cunningham tapes immediately. Because nothing about Mannion appeals to me. I'd rather have, if we're picking him that late, if he's going to stay in the G League and then I guess lead the second unit eventually, maybe there's some appeal. But yeah, like you said, there's nothing there really. Jess, anything that you like from him or last impressions from Nico?
So his last game, it was the Washington versus Arizona Pac-12 tournament game. Nico played 37 minutes, was 4-for-8 from the floor on 2-for-5 from 3, 4-for-7 from the free throw line, a rebound, 2 assists, 4 steals, 1 turnover, scored 14 points. Yeah, I mean, I think I would just reiterate what you guys are saying, like nothing really jumps out at me about him. Maybe with that, like you said, Mike, maybe with that later first round pick, I could see that depending on who they took with their first. Like, I wouldn't really understand, like, getting LaMelo and then also drafting Nico, which I saw on one draft board. Like, that just doesn't really make sense to me, but unless you're strictly going, like, next best available, I guess. But... yeah, nothing really jumped out at me this year from him. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like that's been the whole sense with the Pac-12. Just to go off, not off topic, it's going to be another prospect that's projected to go on the lottery from USC. Onyeka Okongwe. I know I just completely butchered the guy's name. He was somebody I did not consider, but if the Knicks do fall, and that's, I'm just tying this into where Mannion would become a viable option with that second first round pick. If the Knicks fall to like 10, which is a 0.7% chance of happening, but with the Knicks, anything is possible. This guy looks like Bam when I watched the tape, and his numbers actually were pretty solid. 16 points, 8.6 rebounds. Didn't shoot threes, though. That's the problem. But when I watched him, I felt like I was watching a little mini Bam out of bio from when he was playing Kentucky. So in that scope, I could justify seeing someone like Mannion with that second first-round pick. But even then, like I said, I'd rather roll the dice with Cassius Winston, somebody I know can come in and hold the fort down for now and maybe address point guard next year's draft where you have Cade and I'm sure other point guards will come up. But Mannion could be somebody that stays in college too. That's not completely out of their own possibility, especially if he believes he should be near the top.
Yeah, that's true too.
If I'm him, I get out of Dodge beef because if he has another bad season, yikes. Do you know what I mean? Like, if he plays not well, if he came back and he put up these numbers or only improved slightly, he becomes a not drafted player.
Yeah, that's the catch 22, but it's because he's really in a shitty spot where if a team doesn't need a point guard after, like, I'm looking at Tankathon's mock draft right now, just right now after the 11th or 13th pick, no teams are really taking a point guard until the Knicks, not even, not till the second round. So he could slip pretty far, and that's a lot of money lost.
Where do people have Josh Green going, his teammate? Because I like Josh Green a little bit.
Is projected to go in the middle of the first, 17th overall right now. Obviously, this isn't set in stone.
Okay,
but yeah, you're right.
No, but I love him around then there. Like, he is, tell me if this would tickle your fancy, a 6'6"-ish two guard. He doesn't shoot a ton of threes. So, like, his 36% is a little misleading. He shoots just under three per game. But he's pretty efficient, 45% from the from two, 43% from the floor, or 42.5% from the floor. Shoots from the free throw line at a pretty good rate, 78% makes. Decent defender. He's very very athletic. At 17, like we were talking about Goose Edwards earlier before, like a blank project. Josh Green's a little bit less of a blank project, and you could get him at 17. Sign me up. I'm not saying Josh Green greater than Anthony Edwards. I'm just saying at 17, I see more value in Josh Green than Anthony Edwards at
9-1. I like that. I think that's somebody I'm going to start paying attention to because I'm looking at his stuff right now. And I did see him during the season when I did watch Mannion. I only watched a handful of Mannion games. But, yeah, Josh Green was good. And if he's 17, why not roll the dice with him instead of Mannion? I just, like I said, I think Mannion's ceiling is limited in terms of being a star player. I don't think he's anywhere close to being a star player at the next level. I hope I'm wrong. You never want to wish a player to do poorly, but that's just somebody I just don't envision the Knicks having any interest in, hopefully. Moving on.
Chess, you watch a lot of Pac-12 basketball. Did you like Josh Green as much as I did?
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. Like, he's definitely got, like, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just like watching him play, you're kind of like, yeah, that's a next level player. Like, he doesn't do one thing like amazing, like you were saying, like Halliburton, you know, his 3-point shooting is going to translate, but he seemed like a very, like, hard nosed, like, tough on the ball type of defender also, which is, you know, obviously very good for a 6'6 wing. I think the only thing to me was, like, his shot form was a little wonky to me, and I don't know, like, I was a little concerned on that. But other than that, I mean, yeah, I think he's just one of those solid, you, like, nothing could go, like, terribly wrong by picking him, I guess.
That's fair. Staying in the Pac-12.
Breaking news: Rand Paul. No, Rand Paul's really? The coronavirus. Breaking.
Yeah. Well, wishes to you, Rand, and everyone else who has it, because this is scary.
His dad said it was a hoax 4 days prior.
That's scary. That's just.
I'm ruining this podcast. I realize this, but I can't help it. Many world things are happening.
It's fine. I mean, that's been an issue for me too. I like, even when I read or do anything, my mind just starts to drift on. It's just an overwhelming force that's just living in our lives, I guess.
You guys should put on hazmat suits and drive over to my house, and we could just run in my backyard 6 feet apart.
Play pickup basketball from six feet apart.
Oh my god.
Yes.
I mean, that's what the Hawks were doing.
You know
what's
funny? Cuomo was saying, today, because he was talking about people playing basketball, you can't play 6 feet off somebody and win. It's like, yeah, you're right. I mean, I've watched Derrick Rose play for the Knicks. I can agree with that.
That's what everybody was saying, that he's just so scarred by the Knicks that that's where his mind went when he was talking about.
Also, I do want to see Cuomo. Basketball. Cuomo says he plays basketball. This is an official challenge to the governor of New York. I will play you one-on-one.
Oh my god.
So just a couple more prospects before we get out of here. Let's stay in the Pac-12. I know we talked about them last week, so we could keep it brief, I guess. Jaden McDaniels, Isaiah Stewart. I do like Isaiah Stewart. I think Isaiah Stewart's better But pro prospect wise, McDaniels has that another blank canvas prospect type of person where the tools are there. And if developed properly, there's a case to say he's a much better pro prospect than Isaiah Stewart, just because Isaiah Stewart is an old school quote unquote forward. Yeah, Jess, who would you, if you're the Knicks, let's say both of them are available. Let's say you trade into the.
Don't do this, Mike. Don't do this to me.
All right.
Don't do this to me.
I have to, though. Who are you taking?
Okay. Man, you're killing me. Wait, is this true? So I didn't watch this game because, or maybe I think I was like half-heartedly watching it on my phone. Did Jaden McDaniels not start that Pac-12 tournament game?
Didn't catch the beginning. I saw parts of it.
I did not watch
I'm looking at the box score, and he played 31 minutes but didn't start. Interesting. All right. Well, first, let me just run through this game, and then I'll try to answer your question. So Jaden, like I said, didn't start but played 31 minutes, 3-for-9 from the field, 1-for-4 from 3, 3-for-4 from the free throw line, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He did foul out also. Had 10 points. Now, Mr. Isaiah Stewart, and I remember texting our college basketball group. I gotta find it. At one point, he was 6-for-6 with a 3 for 18 points of Washington's total 26 points in the first half. That was at the under 4 timeout. He ended up going 9-for-11, still 1-for-1 from 3. 10-for-11 from the free throw line. Scored 29 points and had 12 rebounds. It's actually funny. My dad knew I was coming on the podcast, and so we had a quick conversation, and he's like, tell the Knicks to draft Isaiah. Now, for those who need to know, he's one of the biggest Isaiah Stewart fans. That's where I get it from. So this is completely biased opinion, but his point was, why not take a guy that you can literally say to him, I want you to lead the league in rebounding, and he will literally go and do it. If you tell him that's what you want from him, he will go and do it. And he was bringing up the Hawks, so it was kind of funny you were bringing up earlier, Joe. But, like, why, you know, obviously the last, what is it, three, four years, the Hawks have strictly drafted based on offense, pretty much. Why not get a guy that people are worried about his offensive limitations because he is such a old school big guy, but will literally take care of the boards for you. I think that's a pretty good like fight for why Isaiah will do well in the NBA. So your question, Mike, was if they dropped.
I'm looking at Isaiah's stats before I re-ask the question. He shoots well from the line. I guess you can talk more to this more than anybody since you've known Isaiah before Washington. Like, you've known him the longest out of anyone here. Can he develop a somewhat jump shot? Because I'm not in that party. Yeah,
I told you last pod, we should completely disregard certain
prospects because, oh, he's a traditional big man. Yes, if you're picking up near the top where you can address other needs, that's different. If he's falling all the way down to the Knicks right now, are projected to pick 28th because that's where the Clippers finished. And he's there? Are you kidding? Like, you can't pass on that. Me neither. I think he'll go like the 15 to 18 range. I think he'll go.
I'm going to the Bucks, which,
that's pretty far, though.
Which would be great. So he had Jaden going 18th to the Mavs and Isaiah going 19th to the Bucks, which seems, I mean, that makes sense to me. I think it's gonna be hard for teams to get like past what you were saying, the scenario of like he's just like an all-time big guy, but there was something crazy I'm looking in Vecini's piece. Here it's with him talking about Isaiah. They were about 11 points per 100 possessions better than their opponents, without him on the floor, they were 12 points per 100 possessions worse.
It's not talked about. I think
that's insane.
Joe mentioned it earlier, where floor safety is a necessity in this draft. There's just a lot of blank canvas guys, and Jaden's the prime example of that, where why are you passing on somebody that you know can contribute from day one, especially if you're somebody with the Knicks, like the Knicks, where you don't know where half the production's going. If Julius Randle's still there, great. If not, I would love to have Isaiah Stewart replace Taj Gibson's minutes on the bench. That's somebody I would really enjoy having on the team. And I'm sure you can lend more knowledge on this. Isaiah looks like somebody who puts in a lot of work. So that's personality comes into play here too, especially if trying to build a culture.
For sure. I mean, if you're looking for a culture guy, he is your guy. Like, and like I said, like his shot, if you watch it, he has great form, especially for how big he is. And I think I brought this up last pod, like you literally will not see someone run harder up and down the court. Like I beg of you to find me someone who runs harder than he does. He's just a workhorse. And like you said, in a draft where there's so many unknowns, why not take a quote unquote safer pick where you at least know you're going to get someone who rebounds their ass off for you. And I feel like,
yeah, I agree. And if he does fall, I do think I would love for him to fall to 23 to the Heat. If he cannot go to the Knicks, I think the Heat will find a way to use him. Joe, real quick, anything that sticks out to you on either prospect or who you would prefer if you were picking for the Knicks or just in general?
For the Knicks, I'd take McDaniels just because like the Stewart thing feels redundant to me. Mitchell Robinson, him, whoever else down there that they're going to keep around, feels redundant. You know, I agree with Jess though, like him in that, you know, the mid to late first round as a guy, you feel like, you know, will rebound and work his ass off. Totally get it. I don't think on the Knicks it works. I like Jaden McDaniels slightly more as a prospect. Even though he's less of a known than Isaiah Stewart, but mostly because his variables are higher. This is where I'm going to do the thing where I contradict myself. The whole podcast I was talking about doing knowns. And here with Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels, I'm going to talk about the variable unknowns. McDaniels projects slightly to be better in different areas than Stewart. I know just talked about his shot looking good. Obviously, he only took like 0.6 per game in college. So like McDaniels projects, or the idea of McDaniels projects to be slightly better in slightly more areas. But yeah, like I wouldn't be mad like if Stewart went over him, depending on which team would draft it. But McDaniels was also a guy, and Jess could probably speak to this, and because Washington underwhelmed this season as well, where he did vanish sometimes, which is not.
Yeah, it was the main reason I hated Cam Reddish, that is. I'm not a fan, and Kevin Knox too, where they disappear in plain sight, and that's just a very big turnoff for me. But having said that, like you said, there's an exception. Yeah, so I do like a prospect.
Let's talk about your turnoffs, Mike. no, just your general turn-ons. This has been such a negative podcast. Tell us what you look for in a woman.
We'll save that for after hours.
This is getting weird.
I haven't left my house
TKW after hours, baby.
11 years.
Yeah, so we just have two more guys to get through. Isaac Okoro, I feel like this one could be brief because, A, I don't think he's really that much of a prospect for the Knicks given where he's projected to go. And B, they don't need another bad shooter. I know some people really like Okoro because he's a defensive beast. But 67% from the line, 29% from three. He does shoot 51% from the floor, but a lot of those attempts are dunks and point-blank looks. I don't particularly like him that much. I understand he is talented. I wish him luck on another team, but he's just not what the Knicks need. Jess, anything that sticks out from Okoro, or yeah, just I'll just throw it around to you guys and see if I'm missing something.
No, I agree with you. I don't see him being a Knicks pick. Just pulling up the last game. So they didn't play in the SEC tournament before it got canceled. So their last game was regular season game versus Tennessee, which they won pretty handedly. He played 18 minutes, 3-for-5 from the field on 1-of-2 from 3, 4-for-4 from the line, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 11 points. So, yeah, I mean, he's just another guy. Like you said, a lot of it was dunks and point blank baskets. Nothing really jumped out at me where I was like, yes, this is what the Knicks need. So he's just there.
Big same. Like, seriously, like, I don't have a lot to say on him either. Like, I'm just like, eh. Like, I don't want to. I've been doing it all podcast talking shit about all these guys. I think I said like nice things about Halliburton and Josh Green, and that's about it. Yeah, there's not a single thing for him that does
the problem, man. It's kind of been he is a microcosm of the full class, where he might have flashes and he might be a talented player, but you put him in any other draft, I feel like he's a mid first round guy at best. And right now he's projected to go top 10. And yeah, it's just. That's just how this draft is, and we got to take it as it is. But like I said, I feel like he'd do better on a team that needs his skills more than the Knicks do, because the Knicks need shooting, they need a lead guard, and he hasn't addressed either.
2020 really is the worst draft class ever. We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Overall, for the class, I still think. Well, I mean, we have the next couple of weeks are going to be a lot of international talk. I do like the. I think the international guys are being slept on, and yeah, RJ Hampton, I completely forgot about, but that's another player that I would consider over a lot of these college guys, where he played against adults. And I feel like that's better practice than dominating against kids.
Nice.
But yeah, I feel like college has just been really. Blah. Like, I guess this will do. We're going to end with Obi. But before that, Sadiq Bey, I remember last week, or last episode rather, you weren't that high on him. I've been watching him since. I do see a good floor spacer. Is there something about Sadiq that you just don't like, Joe? Or is. That's fun.
I mean, so, like, again, I'm going to do that thing where I semi contradict myself, especially when I did the Halliburton thing where I said this one translatable thing. And you know, Bay actually shoots better from three than Halliburton, but, I don't know, man. Like when I watch Villanova play and I know he makes like 45% of his threes and he shoots a pretty high volume, which is like an absurd thing to do for like a guy that's 6'7", 6'8". I don't know where he fits in the NBA. Like, if he's playing the three, I don't think he's going to be able to guard anyone because I don't think he's athletic enough. And then if he's the four, he weighs, like, I don't know, like 210 pounds, so he's going to get beat up a ton. So, like, yeah, it's great that he can shoot threes. I just think he's going to have to play super limited minutes because he's just going to get roasted when he's playing defense.
Elise is the main point of intrigue for me. It's very smooth. It looked like Buddy Hield to me. When I went in the comments section,
don't you compare him to Siobhan?
No, he's not. I'm just saying, like the way the release, like it's very quick, very smooth, like ideal catch and shoot guy. That's the first person it reminded me of. But obviously, Buddy Love is on his own level. Never gonna disrespect Buddy Love, but it is a smooth release. I saw a lot of Robert Covington comparisons. I don't really see that in him, but I will be pleasantly surprised if he ends up being more. He's still the main guy I like. If the Knicks pick, it's actually 27th they're projected, not 28th. So that's somebody I do like. Jess, anything from Sadiq that any last impressions that he possibly left? Or is he kind of just is what he is?
I pulled up that game, which again was a regular season game.
Do people consider him a good defender? I'm asking.
I don't think so. I think it's okay. Straight floor space.
I was never really...
All right. I'm going to eventually, once we start, like, my goal for draft season is to start literally just doing 30-minute episode deep dives. I know Harley from last people that listened last year, Harley Geffner from the Knicks Wall, he's big on him. So I want to see why he likes him so much.
Where does Harley live and where did he go to school?
Harley lives in LA. I do not know where he went. I think he went to UPenn actually. But.
Oh, okay. So he's Philly related.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's true. But yeah, so that's going to be a good discussion. But for now, for me, he's a shooter. But yeah, that's where I am with him.
And in terms of his last game, it was that 1-point win over Georgetown. He led Villanova in scoring with 18 points, 5 for 9 from the field on 3 of 5 from 3, 5 of 7 from the line. 3 rebounds, an assist, and a turnover.
Not bad. I mean, like I said, he's not great. He's not bad. He's what you want. Yeah, exactly.
It's just there.
All right, so just to come full circle, last prospect, Obi Toppin from Dayton. Since the season's over, he was probably the player of the year, I guess. Nobody else really stuck out. Most of the appeal with Obi is his in-game dunks. He did shoot well. His numbers do look well. 20 points per game, 70% from the line, 39% from three. He did only shoot 2.6 attempts per game, 63% from the field. But like I said, a lot of those were dunks, highlight reel dunks. He was a zero-star prospect going to Dayton. Now he's leaving. He's probably going to – oh, he should leave – probably a lottery guy. What do you guys think? I'll start off with Jess. Jess, what do you think about Obi, last impressions, and anything else?
So in terms of last impressions, I mean, his last game was the game we talked about last pod where he literally put the ball through his legs and then dunked it in game. Took down my homies at George Washington pretty handedly, which, you know, wasn't a great look for me, but it's all right. But I've been thinking a lot about it, especially after our last pod, where I think Joe was a little bit lower on him as an NBA guy than I was / am, where it is a little bit more difficult to see, because, like, It doesn't help that he played in the A-10. Like, his numbers are great, and I think he could have done that in a bigger league, but he didn't. So you can't just live off the fact, like, yeah, he could have done this in the ACC or SEC or something. Like, you really don't know, but he's still, I mean, that Kansas game, they replayed that a couple days ago. I was rewatching that from Maui. I mean, he still performed when he was in those big time games. And there's just something, he's just got like that electric spark to him where I think wherever he goes, he's going to find a way to use that. And also, we touched on this last pod, and you just mentioned how he was, you know, a zero star guy. I think having that kind of experience is invaluable to guys getting drafted, where they've had to kind of work for what they've gotten, and it's not going to be any different going into the league, especially after this weird college season. Like, they don't have the tournament to show in that kind of environment how they perform, and I think guys are going to have a lot more to prove a lot more quickly once the draft does happen and we finally get NBA basketball back. Like, there's just going to be this feeling of having so much more to prove if you're in this draft class.
Anything on Obi?
Very good. Oh, I'm sorry. So I'm kind of still roughly in the same boat I was with them, but I do want to put, like, the caveat out there that, like, I wasn't super high on Brandon Clark for the same reasons I'm not super high on Obi. And I was wrong. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it's not like me being not super high on him makes him not valuable as a prospect. I like him in certain fits. Do you know what I mean? And it's like if the Warriors got him, I'd love him there. Do you know what I mean? But, like, if he's on the Knicks, I don't love him there. something Jess messaged last time we podcast together was his ability to shoot threes off the dribble. And I was like, I don't remember seeing that. So, like, I started watching more, I don't want to say film. Because when you say film, it makes it sound like I'm, like, in a
big
lab.
Difference. Yeah. You're in your you can only watch film with
glasses on. Yeah, glasses on.
Right, with, like,
on
a notepad. Yeah, with a with that yellow legal paper drawn sketches of everything. I wasn't doing that. I went to YouTube and I typed in Obi. He could do that. And I was like, wow, I don't remember this. And it comes off really fluid. So I'm way, like, I don't want to say way, but I'm more positive on him. And then I listened, like, the Game Theory podcast again, like I said earlier, with Chris Stone and Sam Vecenie the other night. He made the big TV. And that's
my goal.
Well, maybe this podcast will make it. I'm on it. And they were talking about Obi, and Sam was talking about it in a way where, like, all the stuff you said about Isaiah Stewart earlier, and all the stuff I think about Brandon Clark, and, like, all these other guys, like, where I feel like Zion Williamson ruined it, right? Like, because he's, like, that other guy that's, like, a weird shape and size, and but he's just, like, a generational athlete in strength. I need to, like, just come to the terms with it's okay for a guy just to be, like, super athletic and not generationally athletic when they're undersized. And that's what Obi is, right? He's super duper athletic. He's strong. I know he's old for his age grouping and all that stuff, but the right fit, the right coaching, like, the Warriors, I get why that, like, for me, that's mentally where it goes, because it's quicker pace. They're not going to ask him to create his own offense. He's going to, like, develop into, I think, an above positive defender, all these things. And Jess really did. She really changed my mind, because I went to the lab and I looked at the OB 3-point shot. And it wasn't just him spotting up shooting threes. It was him coming off the dribble. Or one time, I can't remember the clip where I tell everybody to go look at it. He was coming off a screen and in a catch and shoot where he was kind of falling away. And it was such a smooth and clean release. It was jarring. He's like, it would have been jarring if any player in the world did it and Obi did it. Not that I was like, he could do it all the time, but the fact that I saw it with my own eyes made me be like, oh, okay, Obi's better than I thought.
I've made an Obi believer out of him. My work here is done.
I think my fear of being wrong on Brandon Clark also plays a huge factor.
That's fair. That's
well,
fair.
I still like, I'll accept it. The more I've seen of Onyeka from USC, I kind of feel like.
Don't really? You dare. He stinks.
Oh.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I just didn't like how everybody started putting him as the number one prospect.
No. I think power forward wise, he still might be the best power forward. I'm still in the early stages of YouTube rabbit holes with him. But like I said earlier, he reminds me of Bam. But for Obi, I have more trust in him developing a reliable jumper, like you said, and he has a great name, and I'm a big believer in strong basketball names, and he has one. He's from Brooklyn, so I always got a rep for New York. But yeah, I still believe he's not a Knick player just because of where he's going to go, other positional needs. But I think it's somebody, like, if they do trade Randall, maybe he becomes somebody that they could be interested in, depending on if they move up in the draft. But I don't see that happening right now. I feel like that's a good place to stop.
All the guys we like, we don't want on the Knicks. Is that bad? All the guys we seem to like, we don't want on the Knicks. I like this guy. Don't put him on the Knicks.
The only guy I really want on the Knicks that I feel like will still thrive are LaMelo, Killian, and what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. Danny. Denny, I don't know, Nick's going to be our Denny expert, but I've watched a little bit of Denny and I like that.
Moving forward,
we're
going to
do a little more international. We are still going to include college guys because we still have to talk about the second round, which we haven't really gotten into. And there's still stuff to talk about with the college guys. We just wanted to do, you know, a wrap up on the college season, which was unfortunately cut short. Before we get out of here, Joe, you have anything to plug? Any upcoming columns, pieces? I know you had something on Patino that you mentioned on Clutch Points. Anything coming up?
Yeah, so this past week I did the thing on Patino. I also did Kansas should be declared the national champions. I wasn't serious. If you read it, it was kind of jokey. I have a couple other things, projects in the work. I'm going to play that close to vest. Also, if I had $40 billion in my helmet, I'd take out
a Joe's a man of the people. Make sure you follow him at Joseph Nardone. And he's a great writer, one of my favorites, especially for college. It's really, really informative. And like I said in the first podcast, it's somebody I rely on to give me like a landscape look of the college field. Jess, anything to plug?
Well, I guess not, since they took my season away. No. I don't know, man. It's tough times out here, but you know, I've actually had a couple ideas of things we could hash out. Maybe we can discuss off pod. Just to, you know, keep things light, keep things fun. But other than that, follow us on Nick's Wall. Yes. I think we're gonna start streaming some more on Twitch. Watch me give
check
everyone
that out.
Buckets.
Maybe as early as today, you know. Who knows?
You know.
We're recording this on a Sunday, by the
Who
way.
Knows?
Go ahead, Joe. Oh.
No, I said Uno. Who knows? Uno. I'm delirious.
Joe,
go outside. Yeah, feel the sunshine. It's going
to
be okay.
To Joe. But yeah, all seriousness, check out thenextwall.com. We do have something in the works. I cannot say what it is. I just can tell you Ryan Gray is involved, so you know it's going to be great. Be on the lookout for that.
Man, myth,
upcoming this week, I believe Eli Cohen, who will be joining us for draft season, he has a whole series planned this week. I don't want to give it away, but it's going to be airing from Tuesday to Friday. Check that out. I have a piece coming out on some trade options for the Knicks. And like I said, follow the Knicks Wall podcast. Anthony Corbo is leaving, so make sure you listen to the episodes. Get those episodes with him on them while you can. And yeah, just follow the brand, follow the friends of the brand, follow good content. I know it's a tough time, but we're going to be doing our best to keep everyone entertained because we don't know how long this shit's going to last. So until next time, thanks guys for joining me. We'll talk to you next week.
Later.